Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks as well to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. You can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. We're very pleased to have with us, no, it's not Kelly Cox. No. We sent down the A player today, LaToya Dixon, who is, well, of course, with the York School District. She's the director of their elementary education program and gifted, and is it gifted and talented, or just gifted and talented education? She's been on here before, and she just couldn't wait or resist the opportunity to come back. Isn't that right?
That's exactly right.
That's it. Tell everybody the truth. So tell everybody a little bit about your background.
Sure. My name is Dr. LaToya Dixon. I serve as the Director of Elementary Programs and Gifted Education in York School District 1, where we are connected as one. Prior to working in York, I worked in the Rock Hill School District, started as a teacher and an assistant principal, worked at Rawlinson Road and Old Point Elementary, served as the principal of Mount Gallant Elementary for about 7 years. I've served as a middle school principal in North Carolina under Dr. Lynn Moody, and then worked for Superintendent Molly Spearman at the South Carolina Department of Education as the Director of School Transformation. And I've spent the last 18 months in York School District 1, and I love my job.
That's quite evident. And you love education, obviously.
Yes, I do.
So is there anything you haven't done in the world of public education that you want to do?
I haven't been a superintendent, and I do have my license, and should the right opportunity present itself at the right time. How are you?
That's Charlie Ruffalo.
Yes, yeah. I had his children at Mount Gallant.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did. I'd love to take advantage of that opportunity.
Well, there's a slot open here in Rock Hill if you want to apply for the
job. I'm loving my work in York School District 1 right now.
You know, I told you we were talking a lot off air about the work you did when you were working for Superintendent Spearman down there.
Oh, yeah.
About troubled school districts and consolidation and the reasonings behind it. It was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. But I think the bottom line of what I took away from there is that there's a lot of very, very small school districts in this state that don't have the resources that we all enjoy within the four school districts up here. True?
Absolutely. We have a large problem with inequity in South Carolina. It's sort of the tale of two different states in one state. When you travel past Columbia and you get into the I-95 corridor, you find that the economic infrastructure in many school districts doesn't come close to matching what we experience here in the upstate. And so it makes me very grateful for the opportunities that not only our students have here in York County, but that I had as a student here in York County.
And the sad part of it is I mean, we're just talking about these wonderful facilities that we have here in York County. With what I call applied technology, where the kids get hands-on opportunities to do welding and engineering and automotive and all this other kind of stuff. And I asked you the question off the air. I said, like, what percentage of students across South Carolina do not have that opportunity because their school districts are so small? And you absolutely floored me when you said 30%.
Yes. I mean, even in districts where that career and technical education might be offered, the programmatic infrastructure in those programs and what's offered, the amount of offerings, can look very different based on a school district's financial capabilities. And so you might find here, for example, we're very fortunate in York School District 1. We have a comprehensive high school with the Floyd D. Johnson Technology Center.
Right.
Our students have an opportunity to participate and become certified in things like welding through dual programs with York Technical College, as well as our program that we do in conjunction with Clover School District with our utility pole workers,
right,
who get an opportunity to gain a skill set and become employed, gainfully employed, and make a quality living as soon as they graduate high school. You won't find programs like that all over this state.
It's just a shame. As I said, we could do a whole straight talk show on this. The only good thing, the good part of what you told me is that the state recognizes this, the legislature recognizes this, and they've been doing some incentive opportunities for those districts to consider merging their districts to smaller districts so that they can provide these facilities to the kids who only get one shot at a public education.
Absolutely. I think at the end of the day, for those of us who've been doing this thing for a while in public education, the core of everything we do, it's about our students and how do we prepare them and provide them with as many opportunities as possible so that they are ready when they finish matriculating through our public education system.
Amen. And if we're ever going to get everybody up to a better standard, I don't think anybody would disagree. They've got to have an education. Got to have an education. And in most cases today, a high school education is the bare minimum, and normally it's not enough. You need probably a couple of years after that, but you're not going to get the couple of years after that unless you get a good foundation in K through 12. All right. You didn't come here today to talk about that, but it was very interesting, and you certainly have a very, very interesting background. It's good. All right, so here we are at the York School District. Wow, wow, wow. You know, I don't think there's anything that I talk about with educators I've talked about as much as this whole pandemic and COVID. And we've all lived through it. We thought it was kind of drifting away from us, and now we have the resurgence. We're fighting the should we get vaccinated, should we not get vaccinated routine across the country, as we are here in South Carolina. Should we wear masks, should we not wear masks? And I thought it was rather bold of the York School District here a week or two ago to say, you know what, we are not going to do what the governor and the legislature has told us we're supposed to do, which is not mandate masks. You are mandating masks in York School District, correct?
Well, I certainly don't speak on behalf of the board, but I can certainly clarify that our board did vote unanimously to require masks in our schools. And a couple of things prompted that. At that point in time, nearly 20% of our student body was in quarantine. Our goal was to keep kids in school. We know that when children are in front of a certified, highly qualified professional, that we have the opportunity to provide them with the best educational experience. Secondly, there was a change in DHEC's guidance around identifying close contacts, where before we were able to identify close contacts when they were within a 3-foot radius of an infected person. The new guidance said that unless all parties were wearing a mask, both the close contact and the infected person, that radius would need to extend to 6 feet, which would obviously mean, it's a simple math problem, that more of our students would be at home in quarantine. Having done that, I can tell you that we have seen in a week or so a reduction in the number of students in quarantine, which means more of our kids are in school, which is our goal.
When you did this, and when the district made this decision, the school board in New York, did you get a lot of pushback from the parents? You can't do this. These are my rights, blah, blah, blah.
Obviously, I think all of us who haven't been living under a rock know how divisive of an issue this has been in our communities. So while there was some pushback, I'm proud to say for the most part, you know, folks understand that we need our kids in school, that that's the safest and best place for them. And so we've had a really good level of compliance with that.
That's good. And so when you say compliance, the way your policy is now, everybody's got to wear a mask in the class, inside the school buildings. If Johnny or Susie shows up and they don't have a mask, and you give them a mask, and they say, I'm not going to wear the mask, how do you handle that?
Well, you know, we're using the word requirement. And as a former English teacher, I have to tell you, it's a form of the word request. And so we're not enforcing. There's no consequence for students right now if they're not wearing a mask. We're simply asking them to partner with us and help us keep as many students in school as we can.
All right, so there's no penalty, even though you are using the word requesting or whatever the word is.
Correct.
All right. So it's a mandatory, non-mandatory policy.
It's a requirement.
You should be a politician. Good for you. And you've already seen an uptick in the number of kids that are in the schools coming into class.
Yes, we have less students in quarantine than we've had previously before the mask requirement was passed unanimously by our board.
And I don't think anybody anywhere in the country would argue that virtual learning don't cut it compared to in-classroom learning.
Well, you know, what every student needs is different, but what I can tell you from my scholarship and review of literature about virtual learning is that children learn best when they have contact with a highly qualified, certified teacher. And for some students, for many students, especially those in the developmental stages of their learning, our early learners, that time with a teacher in a face-to-face environment is important in developing reading skills and social-emotional skills and foundational skills to learning in and of itself. So, yes, I believe that face-to-face is a better choice for most learners in most cases.
So you started the school year almost immediately, like with about 20% of the students in a quarantine. Do you have any current numbers? I mean, has it dropped to 15 or?
I think it's less than that. Our dashboard is updated daily. I don't have an exact number in front of me, but I can tell you that it is reduced greatly from the time prior to the passing of the board voting to require masks.
Is the school district doing anything? I mean, I don't know whether any of the school districts are doing this, but since you have a lot of students that are over 12 years of age, are you doing anything to offer vaccinations to those who are over 12?
Yes, I believe our district has just began to advertise a vaccination clinic that's going to be held soon for students who are over 12 as well as adults. That may be found on our social media page. I can't give you the exact dates, but I believe that advertisement started this week.
All right. So you are getting – you're going to start. That's good. That's very good. And, of course, what will be very interesting is once these pharmaceutical companies develop the vaccine for kids under 12, it'll be interesting to see what the school districts do across the country, because right now you can't get a kid into school unless they have a vaccination record of whatever it is, measles, mumps, and whatever. But that's a whole nother discussion. So other than the pandemic, how are things going at the York School District?
I thought you'd never ask. We're so excited to talk about all the great things that's been happening. One of the things we're really proud of is our new strategic change agenda. COVID, while it was a huge challenge for us last year, it also allowed us, provided a route for us to really rethink how we're conducting teaching and learning operations within our school district. We've got three major goals in that agenda, formerly known as the strategic plan. One is to build leadership capacity at every level of the organization. And that is because we believe that everyone can lead, no matter their position or where they are within the operations of the school districts. And that includes both students and staff and parents, all stakeholders. Two is that we want to encourage innovation and flexibility. So last year, almost overnight, we went one-to-one with Chromebooks in grades 7 through 12. This year, we've expanded that. And now in grades 3 through 12, we're one-to-one with Chromebooks. And so we want to encourage teachers to create innovative and engaging lessons and embrace leveraging technology to improve their instructional practice, but more importantly, student learning.
All right. Now, Dr. Dixon, you have to step back here now. I don't know what you're talking about when you say Chromebooks. I have no idea what that is.
So similar to a laptop, Google's product for a laptop is called a Chromebook.
A Chromebook. Oh, okay. Yes. I got you. Okay. What's the third thing?
And the third thing is our focus on readiness, and it is around how do we ensure that students are ready for career, college, military, whatever they choose as they matriculate to our K-12 system. So we're trying to create challenging and supportive learning environments. I think something very powerful that we did in that process as we developed the strategic change agenda is we had stakeholders, both internally and externally, but we had students as a part of that process. And listening and honoring their voices in terms of what they told us that they need and desire in their learning experience was a key to our work.
You know, I just did a show, I think it was Tuesday right here. You might want to go back and pull it up because it was with Russell White. He is a business consultant. And we spent the whole half hour just talking about communicating with the younger generation and how that is so much different than your generation and my generation. It was a fascinating program. Kind of sent the chills up my arm because it's if you don't realize how different we are, you're never going to be able to get across what you're trying to get across. A lot of these, a lot of the younger generation, they do their communication off a screen, and they, you know, verbal communication is a whole nother. They're just not as comfortable with that.
Yeah, our students expect us to honor their voices.
Yeah.
And they live in a world where their voices are honored. If they have difficulty with a experience as a customer somewhere, you know, there's nothing for people to tweet about their bad experience of customer service. And in today's day and age, with the way social media works, companies can't afford for bad social media publicity.
Yeah.
And so in transferring that to the work we do, it's important that we recognize that we need to listen to our students, honor their voices, and try to provide them the experiences that they so very much deserve.
So give me some examples of what the students brought to this process as far as stuff they wanted to have included in this.
Absolutely. They want choice about the work that they're doing. And so, you know, we have operated in this age-old industrial model in education where everyone gets the same thing. We're all going to write a paper on the same topic. Perhaps if the skill that we're trying to teach is persuasion, then children get an opportunity to decide what it is they want to write about. Novelty and variety. They want hands-on learning. They want an opportunity to share their work, to display it, and to show it. You know, we have to recognize that most of our children have a tool in their hand that allows them to make a movie from their handheld phone. And so their display or the way in which they demonstrate their learning might not look the way it looked when I was in school, where you got a clothes hanger and you made a bookmobile to show what book you read. It's going to look very different. They don't want to be boxed in by our experiences. They want to be led to be able to create things that match the experience that they're having in the real world every day. So their experiences have to be relevant and meaningful. And
but how does that, I mean, how would that translate into the classroom? Let's say we're in a history class and the teacher wants us to do, a paper on, pick something, let's just say the Korean War or something. Now, instead of saying, I want you to discuss the elements that led up to the beginning of the Korean War, the student would say, well, I don't want to mess with that. I'd rather talk about the armament that was used in the war or something like that.
Well, perhaps I do want to talk about that, but I want to do it in the form of a podcast. I want to create a historical podcast that talks about the causes and effects of various wars throughout our world. And I want to offer it to other students to learn more about history. Maybe I want to build a website. Maybe I want to create a documentary, and I want to interview people who were a part of the Korean War or who have relatives who were a part of the Korean War and use primary sources.
Wouldn't that be fun to be in school today to do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Me and my phone and might do all that stuff together. That's great. I would love to see that kind of stuff. So is that a hard sell to the teachers who are?
Absolutely not, because I believe our teachers, as I said earlier in the show, the core reason we all got into this business is it's about our students. They're most important. And our teachers are living in that same world. We're all operating in that world. I can remember when I was a first-year teacher at Rawlinson Road Middle School in the 90s, I had a chalkboard, and email was the hottest thing out. I thought that email was just amazing. You could write something to somebody, click a button, and they could see it, and it didn't involve a postage stamp in an envelope. So the way in which we live and work and play in our world has changed as well.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely it has. It's very interesting. All right, we got to take our mid-program break. Remind you that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. The new hours here, by the way, Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. They are closed on Sunday. Straight Talk presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors online at AndersonGriggs.com. Our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Of course, fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes 7 days a week here at Substation 2. The magical way we do it, 1, 2, 3, slice, 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 garden, garden, garden. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, It's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Hey, Alex, have you tried that new pastrami on rye at Substation 2?
You're darn right I have, and you should too. It's freshly sliced, lean, delicious, served hot, and piled high. And I understand you better hurry because it's a limited time offer.
Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Water, fire, mold, and storms cause property damage every day. When it happens to you, it's no time for second best. That's why insurance professionals trust the locally owned and family-run Paul Davis Restoration of Rock Hill. This is Gina Rogers. Paul Davis is committed to providing extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Our team is highly qualified and trained to handle each situation with care and professionalism. When disaster strikes, call Paul Davis. We are here to help. 329-1140 or pauldavisrockhill.com.
Save on your monthly mortgage payment with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage from Founders Federal Credit Union. Take advantage of low rates while they're still around, and you'll also have no private mortgage insurance costs. The application process is easy, and your mortgage is serviced completely by Founders and always stays with us. Relax your home. For more, visit foundersfcu.com/30. Membership qualification required. Credit evaluation, underwriting requirements, terms and conditions apply. Institutions, NMLS identifier number 410-646.
When your health needs attention, you'll find compassionate care at Piedmont Medical Center. We make it convenient to treat emergencies with online check-in at locations in Rock Hill and Fort Mill. Or if you live with a heart condition, our cardiologists provide advanced treatment options to help you live better. And for pain that slows you down, a minimally invasive surgery can help speed you on to recovery. We are your community built on care.
PiedmontMedicalCenter.com.
Hey, Alex, have you tried that new pastrami on rye at Substation 2?
You're darn right I have, and you should too. It's freshly sliced, lean, delicious, served hot, and piled high. And I understand you better hurry because it's a limited time offer.
Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop. Just so happens that Dr. Dixon here happened to be the principal at Rawlinson Road. What school?
No, I was a teacher at Rawlinson Road, principal at Mount Gallant Elementary.
Mount Gallant, which is where Charlie Ruffalo's children went.
Yes.
And you remember them so well, so we're doing some catch-up. Isn't it interesting when you see the kind of stuff that his daughter learned in the digital world in graphics and what have you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You know, there's nothing more joyful, I think, for an educator than to see children you served become successful contributing members of society. It warms our hearts every single time.
All right, so you got this strategic change underway.
Yep.
And it's working. And I really thought it was interesting about the kids saying, we want choice.
Mm-hmm.
And the heck with writing a paper. Let me put something together on a website or do something with, you know, a presentation, a video presentation. As you say, we all have a camera right here on our phone.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the basics of making sure that the students of tomorrow have a basic skill on how to write?
Absolutely. You know, I think one of the biggest opportunities for us right now in our world and in society in general is that we live in a either-or world when really it's a both-and. So we still believe that children need foundational math and numeracy skills, and we still intend to teach them those things. And when they have an opportunity to display their learning, we believe they deserve choice in doing so. So it's a both and for us.
But what a student says to you, Dr. Dixon, you know, why do I need to know 5 times 5 equals 25? I can just put it on my little phone here, 5 times 5 equals 25.
Well, I think that's simple. You come to Substation 2 and buy a sub, and they charge you $15, and you give them a 20, you want $5 back. So, I mean, those kind of relevant experiences for students help them determine how what they're learning can be meaningful in their practical everyday life.
But you know, something that is really, I guess, becoming passe and is dying is actually taking this thing called a pen and writing in cursive, because everybody's used to texting and typing on the phone. Do you see that in the schools?
Well, we introduced cursive in South Carolina. We introduced it to children, but when I was in school, we actually practiced it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but we've got all kinds of things now. We got digital payment, face recognition payment. We got digital signatures. So the world definitely is changing, no doubt about that.
Yeah, Mr. Gates has changed the whole world for sure. All right, so what are the kinds of new things that are going on at the York School District?
Well, we're really excited about some of the things we've done, some of our capital updates. We've put new turf in our football stadium. We have new carpet.
Turf? That's a brand new stadium up there.
Yep. Well, the turf had been worn down and needed to be replaced. And
By the way, if you have not seen the York High School, Comprehensive High School, when you go by the bypass on Highway 5, just look up on the hill. It looks like a college campus. I mean, it's huge. It is absolutely beautiful. I mean, well done. All right, so new turf.
Yep, we've got new carpet at Jefferson Elementary and Hunter Street Elementary School from our partner Milliken and Milliken Flooring, and it's amazing just to watch their process and see what it does for the environment in a school building. We're really excited about that. We've done some parking lot resurfacing. People always like it when they don't hit a pothole, right? And when that surface is smooth for pickup and drop off. And lots of painting, which is an ongoing project, as you know, of facilities to make sure our facilities look as best they possibly can be for our students.
Well, I think one of the best moves you all did was years ago when you moved your school district office right out into the old York Electric Co-op office. I mean, it's so centrally located. It's right there at the intersection of 5 and, 161.
Yep.
161. They're right there. I mean, it's very, very noticeable.
Yep.
So what's coming down the pike?
Well, we have been working with our parenting partnership facility. We're offering adult ed ESOL classes, and we're very excited about that. In that facility, we have several services that we offer to the community. There's adult ed ESOL classes. There's regular adult ed. There is the Affinity Healthcare Clinic that's open to serve the community. There's Head Start there for early learners. And then there's our Parenting Partnership Program that works with parents and families to help support children as they enter into school. So that's great. We were able to use some of our ESSER funds to add mental health counselors to our schools. And so that has been an important part of our work, as well as behavior interventionists. You know, our children have been experiencing this pandemic along with us, and we would be unwise and naive to not think that it has not affected them both emotionally, spiritually, and mentally. And so we want to provide that support to
them. How could it not affect them? I mean, my gosh. All of a sudden, they don't have their buddies in class to see every day.
Yeah.
They're shuttered at home.
Yeah.
Parents are trying to work. They're all there by themselves. I mean,
yes.
it's mental health. That's become a huge issue.
Absolutely.
Absolutely huge. I mean, wherever you look, well, I'm glad to hear that. And I hope, you know, and I don't know enough about young kids anymore because mine are grown.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope that the teenagers and others that are in high school are open enough to say, you know what? I need some help because I'm not thinking straight.
Mm-hmm.
Do you rely upon them to initiate that, or are the teachers there to try to say, you know what, I think you need to go talk to our counselor?
Yeah, I think it's some of both. You know, there's a reason why we have guidance counselors in our schools to guide and to keep the pulse on our children. And teachers do a lot of that as well. It's just a part of our work that we do as educators. But students also advocate for themselves more now than they ever have before.
Good.
I can remember long ago in my experience where students really, it goes back to honoring their voice, didn't, it was kind of, you know, you sat, you were told, and you did what you were told.
Suck
and
it
now
up. Yeah.
Students are willing to say, you know, this is not right, this is not going well, and I need support.
Well, Dr. LaToya Jackson, you're welcome back anytime. It's always interesting to have you here. You're just a veritable font of information.
Thank you.
Dr. LaToya Jackson with the of course, the York School District, our guest this afternoon on our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relaxed Year with Founders, and by Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. All right, she's going to redeem herself now because she was sidetracked by Mr. Ruffalo here. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes 7 days a week. There's a magical way we do it, and we're going to say it out loud at the count of three. One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice,
slice, slice. Slice.
Garden, 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 garden.
Have yourself a wonderful weekend. High school football tonight on WRHI and all of our sister stations beginning at 6 o'clock with high school football tonight. We'll see you on the radio. Bye.